So I want to take up on May the 25th, 1915, and this is volume 11. Men are obedient to governments which use violence, but they're not obedient to God who uses love. Louisa said, I was in my usual state when my beloved Jesus made himself seen for just a little. And he said, my daughter, the scourge is great. We're in the middle of World War One. Okay. Yet the people do not stir themselves. Rather, they remain almost indifferent, as if they had to be present at a tragic scene, not a reality. Now, this is something which is very, very, very important. There's an extraordinary thing about human beings, that you can see a tragedy on television or hear about a tragedy and you say it's awful, but you're not really moved by it. You're not really moved to do anything. Because in the age that we're living in, we've got tragedy fatigue. There's just so much of it. But there's a thing in the book of Revelation, I think it's in chapter 9. I looked it up and forgot to write it down. I think it's in chapter 9, where it says that in the tribulation that the Lord sends, the people who didn't experience it went on with their fornication and their murdering and their this and their that and their the other. In other words, if it didn't touch their own flesh, they continued sinning. In other words, they learned nothing from it. And this is the problem, why the Lord permitted a world war. Everybody had to experience the punishment. They weren't going to learn from watching somebody else. Isn't that amazing? So watch it again now. My daughter, the scourge is great. That's World War One. Yet the people do not stir themselves. In other words, there's no repentance. Rather, they remain almost indifferent, as if they had to be present at a tragic scene. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
Not a reality. Instead of coming all unanimous to cry at my feet and implore mercy and forgiveness, they stand at attention to hear what is happening. In other words, we keep the news items going. What's next? What's happening now? That's typical of us as humans. Ah, my daughter, how great is human perfidy. Look at how obedient they are to governments. Priests, lay people, do not demand anything. They do not refuse sacrifices, and they must be ready to even give up their own life. But for me only, there's no obedience and there's no sacrifices. And if they did anything at all, it's more pretension and interests. This because the government uses violence and I use love. In other words, the government forces you to do it. Yet this love is disregarded by the people. They remain indifferent, as if I did not deserve anything from them. So you can see that what's wrong with the people is their loss of faith and their inability to discern the presence of God. And as he was saying this, he burst into tears. What a cruel torment, Louisa said, to see Jesus crying. And then he continued, but blood and fire will purify everything and will restore the repentant man. Now, in the Bible, fire is an image of chastisement. It's an image of hell. It's also an image of divine love, which is amazing. Okay. There were, in the First World War, I looked this up, there were approximately 19 million dead, according to the part of Google I looked up, and it said 40 million casualties. In other words, they don't say whether there were, usually a casualty means dead, doesn't it? So with all of this, people were not learning. Isn't it amazing? Because as soon as World War One was over, they started behaving like they needed another World War, which they did get. So while saying this, Jesus showed Louisa the human carnage. What torment to live in these times, she said, but made the divine volition be always done. So when the Lord shows her everything, that's Amos 3:7. The Lord shows the prophets everything ahead of time. So June the 6th, 1915, in the divine will, everything resolves into love of God and one's neighbour. Now, this is a VIP message, because I keep telling you that the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. And if divine will people are not actively loving, then they are contradicting their claim that they're in the divine will. That's why the law I have laid down in all our gatherings is that if you don't love, go home. Because it would be a contradiction in terms that love serves. So Jesus said everything resolves into love because God is love. That's 1 John 4, 7. Okay. And Louisa said, as I am in my usual state, my beloved Jesus, while remaining hidden, wants me all intent on him to plead continuously for my brothers. That's for the rest of the human race. And she's thinking particularly of everyone involved in the war. So while I was praying and crying for the salvation of the poor combatants, you see what I mean? She's really praying for those in war. Wanting to cling to Jesus so as to implore him that none of them would be lost, I reached the point of speaking nonsense to him. And Jesus, though sad, seemed to be pleased with my petitions and as though willing to concede what I wanted. That means to save the lives of the soldiers who had given their lives for their country. And he would accept that as a gift to him. But a thought flew into my mind that I should think about my own salvation. There's a mistake. For her, this is a very serious temptation. Okay. Because we're not allowed to think of ourselves. So Jesus said, my daughter, you, as you were thinking about yourself, you produced a human sensation and my will is fully divine. And noticed it. In my will, everything resolves into love for me and your neighbour. There's the two parts of the law, if you look at my hands, to love God and love your neighbour, and it makes the big L shape. Now, in Genesis chapter 3, when they broke their relationship with God, Genesis chapter 4 shows you the first murder. We're not actually able to love one another unless we're in love with God. And the more in love with God we are, the more we can love one another. It's about that simple, because it's God's love coming through us that goes out to our neighbour. That's what it is. And so that's why I give you that L shape. I think it's actually terribly important. In my will, everything resolves into love for me and love for one's neighbour. There are no personal things. We have got that clear, haven't we? Because by containing my will alone, the soul contains all possible goods for herself. And if she contains them, why would you ask for them? You see, so if we're still asking for something personal for ourselves, we're not grasping what the divine will actually is. Because if you have the fullness, why would you want a tiny bit? If you win the lottery, you wouldn't be going down to the ATM for 10 euros, would you? No, you have the whole lot. So that's what he's saying. You have everything. So why would you go looking for little bitsies? Because by containing my will alone, the soul contains all possible goods for herself. And if she contains them, why ask me for them? Rather, isn't it right that she occupy herself with praying for those who don't have them? Now do you see the issue? If you knew what calamities miserable humanity will go through, you'd be more active in my will for their good. And while saying this, Louisa said, he made me hear all the evils that the Masons were plotting against humanity. Now, you know, if you read Our Lady's messages to Don Gobi in the Blue Book, to my beloved priests, she said that ecclesiastical masonry was what was destroying the church. I'm saying that because of this. And so it was the Masons infiltrated by the Illuminati that were bringing all the damage to the world and still are. Okay. But I'm amazed that she actually named it. Yes. Yes. Normally she just says sects. She doesn't actually name them. But here she names them. So June the 17th, 1915, everything must end in divine will. Now, we've just heard everything must end in divine love. Now, divine will and divine love are together. Okay. Finding myself in my usual state, I was lamenting to Jesus, saying to him, my life, Jesus, everything is ended. There's nothing left for me but your flashes and shadows at the most. And Jesus interrupting me, my book says interrupting my speaking, which is not English, interrupting me said, my daughter, everything must end in my will. Because everything began in the divine will, so everything has to end there. Once the soul has reached this, she's done everything. That really needs to be coloured if you have a colour. You've done everything once you're doing the divine will. And if she had done much and had not enclosed it in my will, one can say she's done nothing. Is that okay? In other words, all the value is in the divine will. In fact, I take into account all that ends in my will. Now, I love the way he says all that ends in my will, because you might discover at a particular moment that you forgot to put your acts in the divine will and say, oh Lord, for the little bits I've forgotten, I'm putting them in as well. You know, it must end in the divine will. Because the divine will alone is my very life present. That is, the divine life is present in the divine will. And if you're living in the divine will is present in you. Okay? My very life is present, as though bound. And so it is right that I take into account even the littlest things and even trifles as my own things, because in each little act that the creature does united with my will, I feel that she first takes it from me and then she operates. So it doesn't matter how small the action is, even if I just pick up this pen off the table. It doesn't matter how tiny it is. If it's in the divine will, it's huge. So this is a very important piece about the value of divine acts. So her little act comprises the whole of my sanctity, power, wisdom and love, all that I am. And in that act done united with my will, I feel my life, my works, my word, my thought and so on being repeated in every little act that's done in the divine will. So that's why you have to put a VIP on that paragraph apart from the entire message. So if your things have ended in my will, what else would you want? All things have only one final point. When everybody dies, they are locked into the divine will permanently. That's it. And so the problem is that if they went into that position in a wrong place with God, they only meet the judgment end of the divine will. If you die in the position of surrender to the divine will, you're going into the beatitude end of the divine will. Because we live between the judgment of God and the mercy of God. Just like a child lives between the cuddles of the parent and the discipline of the parent. Isn't that correct? They're the two stop points. Everybody in society lives between society offering you honours because of the wonderful stuff that you're doing and a prison cell for those who are absolutely rebellious. And again, it's the same thing. It's the mercy or the justice. And where it comes to an extremely serious point is if you die at the wrong end of that scale, whatever end of it you're at, you have it forever. We can't explain enough how important it is to die well, you know. So all things have only one final point. The sun has only one point, that its light may invade all the earth. The farmer sows, hoes, works the earth and suffers from cold and heat, but this is not the final point, no. His point is to reap the fruits and to make them into food. The same for many other things, which many as they are, they all resolve into a single point, and this constitutes the life of man. In the same way, the soul must make everything end in the single point of my will. Notice the single point, there's neither past nor future. Okay. And my will constitute her life. So you will be in the divine moment in every act that you do. in the divine will. You're in the divine moment. And I will make of it my food, he said. So in the next short paragraph, Louisa begins to recognize that she's been lifted up onto a higher plane. She had human sufferings, physical sufferings before. The Lord is going to bring her into spiritual sufferings, divine sufferings. Then Jesus added, in these sad times, you and I will go through a very painful period because things will rage more. You see, the problem about a war is that it releases the demons. And so you have much more than what human beings are doing. You have the demons on top of that. So human anger is then multiplied and terrible things happen. Resentment and bitterness and all the negative stuff is all multiplied because the demons are present. And therefore, in a war, unspeakable things happen. Things that you'd say, no human being could do that. Like, for example, they experimented on living human beings in the concentration camps. And some of the medical knowledge we have today is at the cost of those people. That regardless of whether they were going to live or die, this experiment was done on them. So some of the medicine we have today is at the cost of a person's life. I don't think it's worth it. Anyway, so things will rage more. But know that if I take my cross of wood away from you, I give you the cross of my will. The cross of wood is the sufferings as you have experienced them in the past, the human sufferings. I'll give you the cross of my will, which is totally spiritual. Okay? Now, that the cross of the divine will is given to us all because things happen to us that are not what we want. And surrendering completely to the divine will is the big sacrifice that you make. I give you the cross of my will, which has no length and no width. It is interminable. Okay. A more noble cross I could not give you. It is not made of wood. It's made of light, because everything to do with God is light. 1 John 1:5. And it's 1 Timothy 6:16. God lives in unapproachable light. And in this light, burning more than fire, we will suffer together for each soul. Now, I want you to notice that. There were millions of people out on those battlefields. I'm quite sure that most of those soldiers thought nobody was caring one iota about them. And there was Jesus and Louisa caring for each one of them individually. Now, if you go to the Hours of the Passion and you come to the scourging of Jesus, you hear very clearly that Jesus made reparation for each individual sin one by one. That's why he was literally skinned like a lamb. I mean, the pain must have been beyond imagining, you know. but here he says to Louisa, we, that's Louisa and himself, we will suffer together for each one of them. And in their agonies and tortures, can you imagine? There's this poor soldier dying out on a battlefield. There's nobody around him. He thinks he's completely abandoned. And there's this wee soul down in Italy who doesn't know that man's name and is there spiritually to take him by the hand into eternity. Look at the divine mercy and divine love that's being manifested to us, that every single one is the same to him as the whole. It's utterly amazing. And that's why he tries to get us to do the Hours of the Passion. I think we need to do the Hours of the Passion very slowly. I can only take them sometimes a paragraph at a time. Because if you try and get into it and realise what he's doing, it enables you to rise to the occasion and say, yes, 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 I want to be in there totally with this. I just think this is fantastic. In this light, burning more than fire, because it's the fire of God's love, we will suffer together for each soul, and in their agonies and tortures, and we will try to be the life of them all. I think it's wonderful. Gives you a different picture to World War One and Two, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. So July the 9th, 1915. One who truly does the divine will or lives in the divine will is placed in the same condition as the humanity of Christ. Now, even the heading is amazing. Okay. So Louisa said, finding myself in my usual state, I was feeling very bad. You need to put bad in inverted commas. Bad has to do with how she feels. It's nothing to do with sin, because you can't be in the divine will and sin. I was feeling very bad, and my beloved Jesus, moved to compassion for my poor state, came for a little while, kissing me, and said, poor daughter, do not fear. I do not leave you, nor can I leave you. That's because the union of their wills is one. So you can't leave her. They've one will together. In fact, one who does my will is my magnet, which acts powerfully over me and draws me to itself with such violence that I cannot resist. So how could God resist a little creature on the earth being, in Louise's case, the only one initially, whose will was locked into the divine will, and therefore God would feel just as happy in that little soul as he does in heaven? Because what makes the Blessed Trinity infinitely happy is they have one will, binding them together. It takes too much, he said, to rid myself of one who does my will. I would be ridding myself of myself if that was possible. So then he added, my daughter, one who truly does my will. Now notice he's using the word truly a little bit often, isn't he? Mm. So he kind of knows us, doesn't he? Mm. One who truly does my will is placed in the same condition as my humanity. In other words, you become another Christ. I was man and God. As God, I contained within myself all the happiness, beatitudes and beauty and all the goods that I possess. On the one hand, my humanity participated in my divinity, and therefore it was blissful and happy, and its beatific vision never escaped me. Okay. On the other hand, this is very Jewish, on the one hand and on the other hand. Okay. On the other hand, having taken upon myself the satisfaction of souls before divine justice, my humanity was tormented by the clear sight of all sins. Okay. So first of all, I want to give you 2 Corinthians 5:17. And then he becomes man. That's Philippians 2, verses 1 to 11. And he's really talking about the all-seeing eye of God. God sees everything and he knows everything. And he's saying to us that as God, he had the clear vision of God, the beatific vision. As man, he had a very clear vision of sin because he's seeing it in God. Is that okay? And seeing sin in God, you see it as it is, not as we see it. And therefore, this vision of the holiness of God on the one hand and the vision of the sinfulness of the human race on the other caused him terrible interior agony. So you're getting an insight into the interior passion of the Lord. So he says, my humanity was tormented by the clear sight of all sins. Notice clear sight, it was not fuzzy. And having to take them upon itself, that's the sacred humanity, in order to satisfy for them, Jesus' humanity felt the horror of each sin. Notice each one. We've just been saying that himself and Louisa were interceding for and suffering for each soldier out on World War One and the battlefields, okay? Here we're being told that Jesus atoned for each sin with its own special torment. In other words, Jesus did our hell for us. Therefore, there's absolutely no reason why we should have to go there. He has paid the price. And a long time ago, I was praying the Passion with Jesus. And I said to him, since you paid for every single sin, what will you say to a soul who comes to you in judgment and they've not accepted anything? And they've not allowed you to redeem them. And you know they're going in the opposite direction to where they should be going. He said, I will stand in front of them, crowned with thorns, scourged, carrying my cross. And I will say, was it not enough for you, my friend? We have a very human image of judgment, sort of somebody saying, out of my sight. You know what I mean? He said, no. I'll stand in front of them as the crucified Saviour and say, wasn't it enough? Was there something else you needed? And so the person going to hell would be in a terrible state, realising that so much love had been given to them and it was completely unaccepted. So this is this kind of thing that you're looking at here. Therefore, Jesus said, I felt joy and pain at the same time, the joy of the beatific vision and the pain of that sin. Love on the part of my divinity, freezing cold on the part of souls. Sanctity on the one hand, sin on the other. There was nothing which the soul would do that could escape me. That's Psalm 139, verses 1 to 5. Psalm 139, verses 1 to 5. Nothing could escape me, be it even the littlest thing. There's the all-seeing eye of God. Now, my humanity is no longer capable of suffering because he's now in glory. That's Matthew 28:6. He is risen. And now my humanity is no longer capable of suffering. Therefore, I live in one who does my will. So each one of us becomes a little incarnation. Okay? The way some of the speakers in the Divine Will put it is that he bilocates himself into us. This is why, on the one hand, the soul feels love, peace, firmness and good, fortitude and the like, and on the other, coldness and bothers and tiredness. Well, I've taken out a PhD in that one. If the soul remains completely in my will and takes these things, okay, not as her own things, but as things that I myself suffer, she will not lose heart. She will compassionate me and she will have the honour of sharing in my pains because she is nothing other than a veil that covers me. Now, the veil that covers me, there again you have the living host. Is that okay? The living host. And she will feel nothing but the bothers and the pricks of the cold, but it is into me, into my heart, that they are driven. So I want to give you a few verses here. Matthew 5:11. Matthew 10:25. Philippians 1:29 and Colossians 1:24. You'll notice that if you look up all the references I give you, that you'll be doing Bible study as well. And you'll find the two dovetailing in a most amazing way. Okay, so July the 25th, 1915. How Jesus is unfortunate in love. You know the way we sometimes say, God, that guy is unfortunate in love. He never seems to get the right person. Continuing my usual state, I was lamenting to Jesus because of his usual privations. And he, always kind, my book says benign, which is a word we don't use, always kind, compassionated me, telling me, my daughter, be stalwart, be strong, be bold. Be faithful to me in these times of tragedy and these times of horrendous carnage and of intense bitterness in my heart. And almost sobbing, he added, "My daughter, in these times it's World War One. I feel like a poor unfortunate. I feel unfortunate together with the one who is wounded in the battlefield." And there's the identification with Jesus. As far as he's concerned, he's dying on the battlefield. That's Acts 9, 4 to 5. If you persecute them, you persecute me. Remember? Matthew 10, 40 to 42. And there's another one in Matthew 25. Whatever you do to the least of my brethren, you do to me. Do you remember that one? That's in Matthew 25. So he identifies with each one of us. So he said, "I feel unfortunate together with the one who is wounded on the battlefield. Unfortunate for the one who dies in his own blood, abandoned by all." But of course, he has somebody standing by his side, making sure somebody else is interceding for them. And don't you realize in these awful times that we're living in, he's getting more and more and more people into the divine will, interceding for everybody and to intercede for them before the chastisement, so that whatever happens in the chastisement, they're all covered. That's terribly important. Jesus said, "I feel unfortunate with the poor one who feels the weight of his hunger. I feel the misfortune of many mothers whose hearts bleed for their sons in battle." I want to give you Isaiah 53, 4. Isaiah 53, 4. "Ah," he said, "all misfortunes weigh upon my heart, and I remain pierced. And in the face of these misfortunes, I see divine justice wanting to put out more divine fury into the field against humanity, unfortunately, still rebellious and ungrateful." Now, notice throughout these volumes, humanity is always identified as the ungrateful ones. And then, "who can tell how unfortunate I am in love? Ah, souls do not love me, and my great love is repaid with repeated offences." That's one of the things that Louisa does for us, both in the Christmas Novena and in the Hours of the Passion, is to put across to us the enormity of the love that Jesus has for us and the enormity of our ingratitude. I think they're put across very well in both of them. Now, in the next paragraph, he says that because of all the desperate spiritual need that's out there, that we should use whatever suffering that comes to us for souls. My daughter, he said, "in the midst of so many misfortunes of mine, instead of consoling you, I want to be comforted. I want souls who love me, who love to be around me." Now, beside that, I want to give you Mark 3:14. I want you to look, souls around me. In Mark 3:14, you're told that Jesus called the 12 apostles because he wanted them to be his companions. He wanted them to share with him. "I want souls to love, to be around me, that they may keep me faithful company." Okay, so we've got to step in there where others have stepped out. "And give all their pains to me." So the first thing you don't do is run for the Panadol. Maybe the last thing you don't do is run for the Panadol. Some of us have learned a little bit along the way, and it's very liberating. It's very liberating. Because the world today tells you no pain, no distress, no nothing. You must be going to wherever you're going to on cushions. Life isn't like that. Whereas Jesus tells Louisa that everything that happens to us, absolutely everything, is divine currency to bring souls to him for eternity. And I'd rather have my headache and bring souls to him for eternity. I'm only using that as an example. I don't have headaches. Okay. I think it's absolutely fantastic. "I want souls to love to be around me, that they may keep me faithful company, that they give all their pains to me as a relief for my misfortunes and to impetrate, now we usually say intercede, to intercede for grace for the poor unfortunate ones, whatever condition they're in. Depending on whether souls are faithful to me in these times of scourges and misfortunes, once divine justice is appeased, I will reward the souls who have been faithful to me and have taken part in my misfortunes. I've told you before that one of the surprises that you will have in heaven is the number of souls who will come and say to you, I'm here because of you. That'll be one of the enormous, amazing surprises in heaven. Yeah. My mother was the first one who told me that. She said, heaven is full of surprises. And one of the big ones is someone that you have brought there. Someone who can say to you, it's because of your prayers or your sufferings or your whatever, I'm here. One of the great surprises of heaven. In other words, you'll bring God a little harvest, which I think is fantastic. So July the 28th, 1915. The soul who lives in the divine will forms one single heart with that of Jesus. This put another VIP on this one. We have just been looking at the fact that we become one will with him. Now, then we shove on to one heart with him. The heart is love. So divine will and love. Okay. I was repeating my laments to Jesus, Louisa said, saying to him, how is it that you've left me? It doesn't matter how often he tells her, he doesn't leave her. He doesn't. It was so refreshing to hear Greg saying, it's hide and seek, which means I know he's coming back. You got that one clearly, yes. Didn't you? You promised me that you would come every day at least once, and today the morning is gone, the day is ending, and you're still not coming. Jesus, what torment is your privation, what a continuous death. Yet I am all abandoned to your will. That's the important bit. Now, this bit that I'm just going to read, the sentence I've just read, I want you to colour. Yet I am all abandoned to your will. Even more, I offer you this privation, the thing she says is killing her, as you teach me, in order to give salvation to as many souls, for as many instants that I am deprived of you. Now look at that. She's not only offering it globally, she's saying for every single instant, I would say every nanosecond. Okay. For every single second that I'm suffering this, I offer it to you for souls. Now, my comment in the margin of my book is 10 out of 10. Right response. Because that's exactly what the Lord has been saying. Whatever it is that's causing you distress or pain or anything else, that you turn it into divine currency. I place the pains which I suffer when I am without you like a crown around your heart. Look at this. In order to prevent the offences of souls from entering into your heart and to prevent you from condemning any soul to hell. But with all this, oh my Jesus, I still feel my nature being upset. That's her whole being. And incessantly I call you, I search for you, and I long for you. At that moment, my beloved Jesus extended his arms around my neck and clasping me, he told me, my daughter, tell me, what do you desire? What do you want to do? What do you love? Notice the emphasis I've given to you. Mm-hmm. And Louisa said, I desire you. And I desire that all souls be saved. I want to do your will and I want to love you alone. See, the divine will and love. Do you see it? So you have three things there, divine will, love, and saving souls. St. Therese of Lisieux is very close to Louisa in her words here. She said to the Lord, I choose whatever you choose for me. And that touches me very deeply. I choose. I'm not putting up with it. I'm not just surrendering to it. I'm not just sort of resigned to it. I choose. It's a fantastic act of the will. I choose what you choose for me. So Jesus said, so you desire what I want. With this, you hold me in your power. please colour that bit. If you got the first bit, now get the second bit. If you desire what I want, with this you hold me in your power and I hold you. And you cannot detach yourself from me, nor I from you. How can you say then that I've left you? Okay. Then he added in a tender tone, my daughter, one who does my will is so identified with me that her heart and mine form one single heart, one single will, and one single love. So I want to give you John 14, 20 to 21. You in me and I in you, both completely one. And since all the souls who are saved through this heart, Jesus' heart, and as its heartbeat is formed, so do they take flight towards salvation coming out from the mouth of this heart. I will give to the soul in the divine will the merit of those saved souls. That's what I said, you're going to have a little harvest. Okay? Because she wanted the salvation of souls together with me, and I have used her as the life of my own heart. Isn't that fantastic? So, when we're consciously living in the divine will, and the divine presence is with us, he's looking out through our eyes, he's speaking through our mouth, he is reaching out to people, he's loving them through our love, he's serving them through our hands and so on. You've heard that before, it's just that we need it underlined, you know, because you saw that on Saturday, didn't you? Mm-hmm. So August the 12th, 1915, the hardness of the people, we don't say peoples really, and how they want to be touched in their own flesh. Now, we got a little bit of this already. As I was in my usual state, my beloved Jesus came, Louisa said. And he said, my daughter, how hard the people are. This is Isaiah 6, verses 9 to 10. They are blind, they are deaf, they are dumb because they are hardened of heart. Okay. How hard the people are. The scourge of war is not enough. Misery is not a sufficient dose to make them surrender. You see what he's looking for? The surrender. They want to be touched in their own flesh. Otherwise, one gets nowhere. Now, that's Revelation 9, verses 20 to 21. I knew I wrote it down somewhere. Revelation 9, 20 to 21. Don't you see how religion triumphs in the battlefield? In other words, the soldiers, as soon as they realise they're facing death, suddenly remember their prayers. They remember what their mother taught them. And so they turned to God. There were many, 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 many conversions in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Now, these same people, if they hadn't ended up like that, mightn't have gone down that route in life. That's the mystery. And why, Jesus said, because they are being touched in their own flesh. The thing has come right to myself. It's touching me. This is why it is necessary that there be no country which will not be caught in the net. So the World War started in 2014. Jesus said it has to go global in 2015. Isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. In one way or another. But almost all will be exposed to being touched in their own flesh, either with the war itself or the results of war, which, of course, is starvation and disease and all the rest of it. I'm sure even we ourselves grew up hungry, didn't we? Yes. I do not want to do this, Jesus said, but their hardness forces me to do it. Why is he forced to do it? He is trying to save their souls. And that he'll save their souls at any cost to himself or them. My dad used to call that tough love. You will love a person more than they love themselves. Even though it'll cost you pain to help them, and it'll cost them pain as well. Tough love. Sometimes he'd say hard love, you know. Because I remember asking him why he was so hard on us at once, and he explained it to me. Tough love. You've got to love people more than they love themselves, because we can be our own worst enemy, as you know. In saying this, Jesus was crying. I cried along, and I prayed that he would make the people surrender with no slaughter and no blood, which wasn't going to happen, of course, and that all be saved. And then Jesus said, "My daughter, everything will be enclosed in the union of our wills. Your will run together with mine and will intercede sufficient grace to save souls. Your love will run within mine, your desires and your heartbeat will run within mine and will ask for souls with an eternal heartbeat. All this will form a net around you and me, and we will remain as though woven inside of it. This will serve as a bulwark of defence. And while it will defend me, you will be protected from any danger. How sweet it is for me to hear within my own heartbeat, the heartbeat of a child who says with mine, 'Souls, souls, I feel as though chained and conquered and I surrender.'" Now here Jesus is going very deep, and he's saying that if our heartbeat, if our heart is one with his, then all our desires, all our motivations, our very heartbeat themselves are all interceding and crying out for souls. So you see, living in the divine will means that you're actually pumping, if I can put it that way, with the Lord. Every second. That's why he says it must be continuous, because your heartbeat has to pump every second, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, you're in trouble. So in the divine will, for this divine life, it's got to be every second. There can be no break. This paragraph too reminds me very much of Saint Therese of Lisieux. She was not able to leave her convent. She was in an enclosed order. And she said to the Lord, "I offer you my desires. I would like to be a priest to offer Mass for you in the most wonderful way." And she went on and on. "I would like to be a missionary to win souls for you. I would like to be this, that, and the other." And Jesus said, "Done. You desire it, I do it." And so she became the second patron of France. It's amazing. Yeah, and patroness of the missions, yeah. And everything was interior for her, and she had extraordinary sufferings, and she offered every heartbeat, she offered every movement of her body, she offered every step until she could no longer walk. She offered everything. And that's what Jesus is saying, that you don't have to go out and do big things out there. Just use all the ingredients of your life, if I could put it that way. Like a good cook could come into this kitchen and make you a lovely dinner from stuff I couldn't make a dinner with, because they know how to put a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of the other. And the Lord is just simply saying, take the ingredients of your own life and turn them into divine currency. Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
So we're going on to August the 14th, 1915, when we're going to learn how to use the passion to save souls. Okay, so we're on to the... You see, there's three things in divine will, divine love, and souls. So we have to learn how to save souls. "Continuing in my usual state, Jesus came for just a little. He was so tired, exhausted, that he himself called me to kiss his wounds and dry his blood. Which were flowing from every part of his most holy humanity." That, of course, shows you the condition of humanity. So after I went over all his members, making various adorations, which you will read several times in the Hours of the Passion, okay? Offering various adorations and reparations, my sweet Jesus, relieved and leaning on me, said, "My daughter, my passion, my wounds, my blood, everything I did and suffered are in continuous act in the midst of souls." That means Jesus is being continuously crucified among us. It didn't just happen once, because it's happening in the mystical body as well. "As if I were operating and suffering at this very moment. They, that is the passion and the wounds and his blood, serve me as props on which I can lean, and as props on which souls can lean so as not to fall into sin. Okay. And therefore be saved. Now, during these times of scourges, I am like someone who lives up in the air with no ground underneath. That means he's in heaven and he's not on the earth. And amid continuous blows, justice knocks me from heaven and souls through sin knock me from the earth. In other words, he's rejected by all. He's representing us, so justice makes him suffer. He's rejected by us and we make him suffer. What a terrible agony he's in. Now, the more the soul in the divine will remains around me, kissing my wounds, repairing me, offering my blood, in a word, redoing herself what I did. You see, that's what the Louisa gets you to do in the hours of the Passion, to redo what he did. So redoing herself what I did during the course of my life and passion, the more props she forms so that I can lean on them and not fall. And the larger the circle becomes in which souls find support so as not to fall into sin and be saved. So the more we do this, the more we form a prop, as Jesus said, so that he doesn't fall, because he's describing himself as suspended in the air, and that souls on the earth won't fall into sin. Okay, so the more of us that will do it, the greater the effect it has on Jesus and on human beings. Do not get tired, my daughter, he said. Do not get tired of being around me and of going over my wounds over and over again. Because that's one of the questions that people ask in the early stages. Surely I don't have to do it all the time. Surely once is enough. You know what I mean? Well, who am I to say this? But if you only told your wife or your husband once in a lifetime that you love them, wouldn't they wonder why you married them? Mm. Of all the things that has to be repeated over and over and over again, it's I love you, isn't it? Because otherwise the love doesn't keep growing. And the more often it's repeated with sincerity of heart, then the more deep the roots go. And so we have to keep doing this reparation all the time. Why? Because sin is happening all the time. Because the church is being brought down all the time, because the Lord is being offended all the time. That's why we've got to continue. And that's our way of saying, I love you. Okay. I myself will administer to you the thoughts, the affections, the words, so that you may remain around me. Be faithful to me. Times are short. Justice wants to unfold its fury, and humanity irritates divine justice. It is necessary that these props multiply more. That means that more people get involved and do not fail in the work. OK, so I'll give you another one. This is August the 24th, 1915. The only thing that makes the soul like God is the divine will. The only thing. Isn't that interesting? So this is a very important message again, and we'll finish with this one. Continuing in my usual state, my beloved Jesus came for just a little, and I gave him a kiss, telling him, my Jesus, if it were possible, I would like to give you the kiss of all souls. In this way, I will satisfy your love by bringing them all to you. Now he's going to tell her how to do it, isn't he? He said, my daughter, if you want to give me the kiss of all, kiss me in my will. I love you with your will. Okay, I kiss you with your will. I honor you with your will. Kiss me with my will, because my will, containing the creative power, contains the power to multiply one act into as many acts as one wants. So if you want to do that all the time, so I say to him, I want to multiply this act to infinity for an infinitude of time. Covers all time, all eternity. So the divine will multiply the act as much as you want. In this way, you will give me the contentment as if all were kissing me, and you will have the merit as if you had made everyone do it. So the merits coming to you are absolutely enormous. While all souls will receive the effects according to their dispositions. Now notice according to their dispositions. Some will receive a lot, some will receive little, some will receive nothing. Now the stuff, the ones who receive nothing, it'll all go back to you. Because in the divine economy, nothing is lost. So Jesus said, one act in my will contains all possible imaginable goods. It's difficult for us to take that on board, isn't it? You will find an image of this in the light of the sun. The light is only one thing. But this light multiplies in all the gazes of creatures. The light is always one single act. But not all the gazes of people enjoy the same light. Some don't look at the sun at all. Some hide from it. Some of weak sight need to put their hands before their eyes, almost not to feel themselves being blinded by the light. Others who are blind do not enjoy it at all. But this is not because of any defect of the light, but because of a defect in the eyesight of the person. So, my daughter, if you desire to love me for all, I love you with your will on behalf of all, is what you say. If you desire to love me for all, if you do it in my will, your love will flow in the divine will. And since my will fills heaven and earth, I will hear your I love you being repeated in heaven. Isn't that fantastic? I will hear it repeated around me. I will hear it repeated inside of me. I will hear it repeated on the earth. And it will multiply from point to point for as many acts as my divine will can do. Look at the enormity of that. Therefore, it can give me the satisfaction of the love of all, because the person is, we human creatures are limited and finite, while my will is immense and infinite. How can those words spoken by me in creating man, let us make man in our own image and likeness, be explained? Now that's Genesis 1:27. How could the creature so incapable ever resemble me and be my image? Only in my will can he arrive at this, because by making my will his own, he comes to operate in a divine manner. And through the repetition, through the repetition of these divine acts, he comes to resemble me and to become my perfect image. That's Romans 8:29, my perfect image. It's like a child who, by repeating the acts which he observes in the teacher, becomes like him. Now that's 2 Corinthians 3:18. You become like what you worship. So the only thing that makes the creature be like me is my will. This is why I have so much interest in that soul, that the soul, by making the divine will his own, fulfill the purpose for which he was created. So we'll stop there for tonight.